All the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it was another fun week in technology. This, of course, was we had Ada Lovelace Day this week. on October 16th.
I always laugh because that's a bit I use a lot in our best of shows because it was so
right.
much fun
and
the
so
first time
Ada,
around.
Ada Lovelace was we were celebrating all of her, and I'll give a little bit of history about Ada later in the show.
Yes.
We also there was a study that looked at hackers' zero-day exploits, and they have a shelf life of around 10 months. And a zero-day exploit goes on the open market for around $250,000. So it's kind of an interesting study, and I'll go through that, what it is, these are, and you know where they're used. We'll talk something about the top technology job trends, and where the most action is, and which metropolitan areas have the most action. We'll provide that, and I'm also going to feature Robert. Ovechinsky, he was actually an American scientist. He came up with a lot of technology like rewritable CDs. He invented the battery that's used in your laptop. Very prolific inventor, and he never went to college.
Wow.
He died this week. That's why I'm featuring him, and it's he's got quite an interesting life. And, of course, it was a huge mailbag. Let me lift that up. It's huge.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yeah, we got an email from Hawk in Bowie.
I gave you a little help there.
Thank you. I needed help. That was really so big. Got an email from Hawk in Bowie. Hawk's one of our regular listeners.
She's prolific, is she not?
Oh, yeah. Dear Dr. Schertz, I recently bought an iPad and would like to view the pictures I've taken over the past several months on my iPhone. On my iPad. I want to look at them both. I want to synchronize my iPhone and my iPad.
That should be simple, right?
Yeah, it is simple. How can I copy the pictures from my iPhone to my iPad? My husband and I are faithful Tech Talk radio listeners. Oh, I love to hear that.
That's great.
Yeah. We've enjoyed fine dining at both your Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge locations as quiz winners four times over the past several years.
They might have to claim you on their tax form now.
That's right. It could be. I wonder if that's a taxable income.
Probably.
Yeah, we won't turn you in.
No.
No,
nobody's paying attention.
That's right. You know that. You know, Bowie. I've gone to a restaurant in Bowie. I think I've had clams there a few times. I can't remember the name of it, but it's fantastic.
In Bowie?
Yeah, in Bowie.
Huh.
I'm trying to remember the name of the restaurant, but it had excellent clams. Well, thanks for listening, Hawk, and for your loyalty to Tech Talk Radio. Now, Apple recently changed the photo streaming feature. This is why you're having trouble synchronizing. In the first case, when they first brought out photo streaming, this was where you could automatically share photos. People didn't really like it. First of all the photos were automatically streamed that you took, and you might take a bad picture. It's immediately streamed there to the iCloud, and then you couldn't delete it. So people were complaining, how can I delete my photo stream? You know, they went to, say, they go to Las Vegas, and then bingo. There might be a picture they want to delete, and they can't delete it. And so the only way to get rid of it was
Something in Vegas might be something.
That's right.
Delete.
And so
yeah.
they
and I got
so,
it.
And so that so then what they actually did they changed it so you could delete photos, and they completely changed the whole photo stream method. So let me explain. And now what they do, I'm using it. By the way, I did a photo stream I shared with you. You might
you know what's funny? While you were talking about this, I am attempting to join up.
Yeah, the photo stream right there. You don't have to join it. I sent it right to your iPhone.
My iPhone.
Yeah, I'm streaming right to your iPhone. I've invited you to photo stream on the iPhone.
Oh, I was looking at it on my Gmail.
No, it goes right there. You click on there, and you can actually set up a photo stream I shared with you this morning, so you could experience it firsthand. Okay, this is what
How'd you
do.
Get into my iPhone?
are the Tech Talk pictures in your iPhone?
No, I'm looking.
Yeah, they're there. I've been hacking you. I'm looking at. No, I didn't hack your iPhone, Jim. You know, relax.
Yeah, it's a little
okay.
early for this.
Okay, this is how you implement PhotoStream now, Hawk. This is a good question. Let me get to it. First of all, you want to open up the Photos app. That's the native Photos app.
I'm doing this now. Okay.
Yeah, and then open up the Photos app. Now down at the bottom there should be streaming. You had to accept it.
Nothing on my phone.
You had to accept an email from me.
Yeah, Well, let me do that on my phone here then.
Yeah, you have to accept my email.
You keep talking, and I'm gonna open up my email.
I sent you an email. You have to open it up on the phone.
I see it on the. Oh. You have to give me step by step, okay?
You have to open it up on the phone,
Jim. I'm working
on
it.
Yeah, okay. Now, what you do is you open up the native Photos app on the. In case since I sent it to you, you just open up that
that
email. Now, once you've opened up the Photos app, on the bottom there are tabs. You click on the. On the photo stream tab, that's the middle tab on the bottom, and that brings up your photo stream screen. Then you click the plus button on the top. This is used to create a new photo stream. Now, what you have to do is you've got to put an email address of who you want to share it with. Now, if you want to share it with just yourself so it shows up on your iPad, you put in your own email address. That would be the email address that you actually, say, use for iTunes. But if you want to share it with somebody else, you can put in as many people as you want to share that photo stream with. Then you hit Create. You press the Create button. And that creates the photo stream and shares it with whatever email addresses you've got. Now you go back and click on the left tab on the bottom. And that is actually then the pictures tab, and then you go to one of the picture albums, and you open up that picture album, and then you click edit on the picture album, and then you go through all the pictures and you tap on the picture, and a check mark shows up, and then you select the pictures you want to share with the check mark, and then down in the bottom there's a share button. You hit share. And then you say, I want to share it with a photo stream, and pick the photo stream. And once it's done, bingo, all those pictures show up in the photo stream and it's shared with everybody real time. Now, this you can only share photo stream with other iPhone users, but this is great. Like if you're on a vacation, you've got four or five people with all an iPhone, you can set up a photo stream, and every time you take a picture, you can share it to the photo stream and share it with everyone else. This feature is fantastic. I've been using it for the last couple of weeks, and thank you for asking the question, because I actually wasn't using PhotoStream until I got the question, but because of this question, I now have it.
Perfect.
Did you get them on your iPhone yet?
It's telling me my Apple ID password has expired. So this is something I have to deal with after the show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand that, because I used it last week. I'm not sure what that means.
Your Apple ID is expired.
Yeah.
Well, it's there, Jim, if you ever solve your little local problems.
I will figure it out.
I really can't do everything.
I know. Wow. What a dig.
We got an email from Margaret in Bethesda. Mm-hmm. Dear Doc, I listen every Saturday AM and look forward to your show, Classroom of the Airways. Boy, she's got that. Yeah, I have a Windows 7 operating system laptop and use Windows Live Media to get my mail. I'm going to need to burn or save all my Windows Live Media mail stuff onto a CD and move it to another laptop that runs XP. Will this work? What's the quickest way to do it? I use Roxio normally to burn stuff onto my CD. Thanks much. The best, Margaret in Bethesda. Well, if you need to switch hardware or reinstall Windows Live Media, it's a good idea to first export everything, to an external subdirectory, then basically transport that subdirectory to another computer and then re-import it into Windows Live Mail. That's commonly known as backup and restore. Now, if you've added Windows email accounts to Windows Live Mail, say like Gmail or Yahoo, most of these accounts just basically allow you to read the messages in Windows Live Mail, and you don't delete them on the main account. So you can simply add them on the new computer as accounts, and they'll automatically sync up. You don't have to do anything. On the other end, if you've got a POP3 account, that's Post Office Protocol, POP, P-O-P, you want to check on the Advanced tab to see if the messages are removed from the POP3 server. Now, if you have not removed the messages from the POP3 server, you can simply go to the other Windows Live Media client, and you can add that POP account on there, and all your emails will come down. On the other hand, if you have deleted the emails from the POP3 server and they only reside in your Windows Live account, then you've got to back them up. Now, your Windows Live calendar, you don't have to transfer that because you can simply go to calendar.live.com, put in your username and password, and it will automatically sync up. So you only actually have to worry about transferring contacts and any mail that's been deleted from the main server. So what you want to do to export messages from Windows Live Mail, simply open up Windows Live Mail. In the upper left-hand corner, open the File menu and click Export Email. And then you just select the target folder where you want to hit, and then you hit finish, and it exports all the mail to that target folder. To export your contacts, you open up Windows Live Mail in the upper left-hand corner, select Contacts, click Export on the ribbon, and then select the file format in the drop-down menu. Now, I would select a CSV format because that allows you to transport all of the contacts individually. You don't want to do the other format because that means you got to transfer every contact separately, import them separately. You want to do them as a CSV file. Then you click Browse, select your target subdirectory where you're going to save them, and then you save them. Then you simply, once you've got that subdirectory set up, you can transport that to the new computer. I'd use a thumb drive, actually. I wouldn't burn a CD. You could burn it on a CD. Or you could simply hook both computers to your Wi-Fi network and do file sharing and copy it over the network. You don't necessarily have to use Roxio to do the CD, but you could. Then once you take that subdirectory, take it to your new computer, then you simply import it. And, you know, it's just the reverse. To import the email messages into Windows Live Mail, you open Windows Live Mail and then open the file menu in the upper left-hand corner and then click Import. You select the file format. In this case, you have exported into Windows Live Mail format, so you're going to import Windows Live Mail. Click Next. Select Transfer, and then click Finish, and they're all in there. And you can import the contacts the same way. Open up Windows Live Mail, select Contacts, click Import on the ribbon, and select the format, which, of course, I said was CSV, and then you select the transfer folder and then click Next, and they're all imported in. So that's actually a very simple thing to do. Windows Live Mail is actually, it just consolidates all these other email accounts. So I always leave the emails on the main server, so if I move Windows Live Mail to another machine, I don't have to do any of this import-export stuff. I just simply can synchronize with those servers, and I get all the mail set up directly. But that was a great question, Margaret. Sorry, it was a little bit complicated, but I thought I'd give you the specific step-by-step details.
And you can get, if you missed a step, you can get it online later on.
That's right. We're going to post this entire discussion online, and the step-by-step discussion is right online. Simply go to techtalkonline.com, and we'll get the show outline posted, and you can review it to your heart's content. Or you can listen to the show again as a podcast. Now, we got an email from Robert Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have a candidate for your Profiles in IT segment of your show. His name is Donald Knuth. K-N-U-T-H. He's been called the father of the analysis of algorithms and has made a lot of contributions to computer science over the years. Your show has given me hours of entertainment, education, and knowledge during these many years I've been listening via your podcasts.
Hours.
Yeah. I think it should be months.
I was going to say,
years.
Because you could, as we've done before, you could do an entire week of Tech Talk Vacation.
You certainly could. You could have a whole thing. And thank you for making these available to everyone, Robert Tyler. Well, Robert, Donald Knuth is a good suggestion. I put him in the hopper of a profile in IT people. By the way, if you're trying to check if we've already featured a person on Tech Talk, you can search the RSS feed on the Stratford website. It's stratford.edu/rss/techtalkradio.xml. I mean, if you go to the techtalkonline.com and do the feed discovery, you'll find it. And you can simply put in the name and search. And as it turns out, Donald Knuth, I have not covered on Tech Talk, so that was a good suggestion. We got an email from Alex in Atlanta. Dear Doc, I'm an audiophile, and I've been recording my music collection using FLAC, a lossless file compression format, which is superior to MP3. Now I want to buy a portable FLAC player. What do you recommend? So do you record yours in MP3 or FLAC, Jim?
I do MP3. I've heard about FLAC before, but it takes up a whole lot more space, doesn't it?
No, not really. But FLAC stands for free. There is a lossless Apple format that takes more space. And there's also a Windows Media lossless that takes more space. But FLAC actually does pretty darn good compression. It doesn't take that much more space. FLAC stands for free lossless audio codec. It's an audio format similar to MP3, but lossless, meaning that the audio is compressed in FLAC without any loss in quality. See, MP3s actually make certain compromises, and they don't record everything perfectly. It's a lossy compression. Now, this is similar to how ZIP works, except with FLAC, you get much better compression because it's designed specifically for audio. And you can play back compressed FLAC files on your favorite players that support FLAC, just like you'd an MP3 file. Now, FLAC stands out as the fastest and most widely supported lossless audio codec, and the only one that is non-proprietary. It's open source. That's why I love it so much. Mm. It's unencumbered by patents and has open source reference implementation. It is well-documented format, and there are several other independent implementations of this that are available. Now, CNET did an analysis of top portable players, the MP3 players, that also will play FLAC. They've got the Samsung Galaxy Player 4.2, and that basically is kind of a direct competitor with the Apple iPod Touch Media Player, and it's an excellent option. The street price for the Samsung Galaxy Player 4.2, it plays MP3 as well as FLAC, is $179. But now, here is the editor's choice on that CNET article, the SanDisk Sansa ClipZisk. Now, the SanDisk MP3 player is a great practical clip-on. It's perfect for the gym. Get this, a street price of $53.
That's not bad at all.
Not bad at all, and that's why it was selected as a CNET editor's choice. It plays both MP3 as well as FLAC. Now, there are a lot of other, very, very more expensive component type of players that will play FLAC, but you were interested in the portable ones.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from a loyal listener.
There's no way to get a FLAC file onto your iPod, is there?
As I was reading this, I was wondering if I could put it on my iPad. I'm thinking that they don't support FLAC.
Rob, I would guess
not. Because it's open source,
yeah.
But that's a guess.
I'm gonna do some research later in the show. If there's a way to do it, you'd find out.
I'll do.
Because you're an audiophile too.
I'm a little bit of an audiophile. Mm-hmm. Yes. We got an email from a loyal listener. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm hoping you would share with your listener some of your top five applications for your iPhone or smartphone. I'm not remembering which you have. I just bought an iPhone 5.
Well, you know what I have because you hacked into my phone, right?
Oh, yeah. You've got the iPhone 3.
No, I don't.
Oh, yeah. You got the 5.
I got a 4.
Oh, you got the 4. You got the 4S. Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, you got the 4S. I forgot. So you've got the same one as I have.
Exactly. So you and I are on the same plane here.
I'm going to have to get an iPhone 5. This is just this, being at your
this
level.
Not...
Being at your level is really very uncomfortable for me.
What happens when I get an iPad? What happens?
That'll be a big problem. If you get an iPad 3, I'm going to have to send Marianne to another conference.
I was going
to
say, I was hoping maybe Marianne would win one for me this time.
Well, what I'm interested in is a good app that tells real-time traffic status in the D.C. metro area and is also a website where you can get some apps. Well, let me give you a kind of a rundown on a few of the apps I like, and then I'll have this full list on the Tech Talk radio show. I like Camera Plus because it's got very convenient image processing, so I can use Camera Plus instead of the native camera, and then I can tweak it with image processing. People say, wow, look at the colors you got. I say, well, I've got just an eye for colors, but it's really the magic of Camera Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like Flashlight because, when I'm going in a dark area at night, I can turn on Flashlight, and I can use the flash as a flashlight. And I tell you, the iPhone makes a pretty good flashlight if you're trying to, find your keys at night.
Yeah.
I use Flipboard for all my Tech Talk research, Flipboard, and I simply put in all of the different you know, keywords and the kind of topics that I want to come up. And Flipboard makes it like a little magazine for me of all of the topics that are of use for Tech Talk.
So you put Tech Talk together on your phone?
Yeah.
Really?
I do research all week during the week on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll find articles on Flipboard, and then I forward them to my Gmail account,
so
they're all there, ready to go. So
I can do
research on Tech Talk,
you know,
anywhere.
I never thought that's his, but the iPhone has changed so many things, hasn't it?
It really has. It really
more
has.
More so than any other phone, don't you think?
Yeah, it has. It's a different way of working with everything. And it did really change the whole world of the smartphone. I use MapQuest for driving instructions. It has turn-by-turn driving instructions, which are really quite good. I mean, as you know, the native turn-by-turn instructions with the new Apple phone are garbage.
Yeah.
And you'll get lost, and you might end up, you know, who knows where. So MapQuest is pretty good. Now, there is a crowdsourced driving deal called Waze, W-A-Z-E, and it allows people to update real-time traffic. Now, MapQuest actually has traffic information in it. It's an AOL service, and it's free. Waze is crowdsourced, and so I've got a couple of friends that use Waze, W-A-Z-E, for their turn-by-turn driving instructions, and then there's real-time update, and you can see all the different Waze people in the area. And what you can do, like, you'll see another Waze user on a particular intersection. You click on them. You can send a message. You say, hey, how's the traffic there? And you can get direct feedback, you know, where they actually are.
Used Waze. Waze is pretty cool. The only problem I've got with Waze is some of the stuff they give you is pretty vague about the location. Sometimes they just give you a street, but they don't give you a cross location. And that's a little bit...
It's not. I mean, some of the crowdsourced data is a little bit loose.
Now, a good way to put it, yes.
I do like TED, T-E-D. This is a technology entertainment. It's for inspirational talks about the future. So I get a lot of, like, inspirational ideas from TED. I really do enjoy that. Paper Karma.
Ted, in that case, I'm going to have to shop for you at Successories for your Christmas
present. Yeah.
Okay. Shirts with inspirational stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, Ted, I mean, there's some great talks on Ted, and sometimes I'll get an idea for Profiles in IT from Ted. Now, I use Paper Karma. You got all this junk mail that comes to the house.
Yeah.
With Paper Karma, I take a picture of the junk mail and I upload it, and they put me on the Do Not Mail list.
Really?
So the amount of junk mail coming into my house has dropped dramatically.
No kidding. Wow.
And... Okay, now, Marianne's out of the country, so I can say this. All of these sale things, like to Macy's, Nordstrom's, and all these things that she just waits for,
God.
I'm on the Do Not Mail list, so I get no sales.
And she'll never...
She doesn't know.
Because
they're just not coming to the house. So I can say that because she's in Ireland. So I love Paper Karma. I've done Paper Karma, probably done 80 or 90, requests for Do Not Mail.
I've got a value pack envelope at home that's going to be taken a picture of later on.
Now, I'll tell you, I love the Amazon application.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazon application is so if I want to order something, I can go to the Amazon app and I can order it in like 2-3 minutes. It's just so convenient. Now, I do like the Find iPhone application, because it allows me to ring an iPhone that the buzzer's been turned off.
Uh-huh.
So Marianne loses her iPhone in the house, and I can actually I can make it ring, and it will continue ringing until she picks it up, even though the ringer's turned off.
Really?
And then if somebody steals your iPhone, you can track where it is.
Let me ask you this. Does it have to be on the phone that you're trying to track, or just on the phone that you're trying to dial the phone from?
You have to enable GPS tracking on the phone.
Okay.
So I went in, I enabled GPS tracking.
On her phone.
On her phone.
Okay.
And so now... The Find iPhone is mine, not on hers. I could also go to the iCloud and find iPhone on the iCloud if I just use a PC, and her phone will ring.
Somebody's watching.
That's right. So you can always tell that. I tell you, when I'm traveling internationally, I use Google Translate. If I've got a Wi-Fi connection, I can put in an English phrase, and it will translate it to the local language, and I can just simply hold up the iPhone, and they can read it. And that's really convenient when you're trying to...
Why, we've used that on the air before, have we not?
Google... Well, no, we haven't used Google Translate.
Yes, we have.
Maybe we have used Google Translate.
I use her to speak English
Now, the trouble was when I used this Google Translate in Vietnam, I was in South Vietnam, and it was the Hanoi dialect.
Ah.
So it was irritating some of the folks in Hue because I was holding these messages up with the Hanoi dialect, and so but they liked the fact that I took the effort. Now, I love voice over IP calling with my iPhone. I've got Skype and Viber. Viber is great. I use Viber a lot. It's a voice over IP client for the phone. It's all free. Now, of course, I got LinkedIn for Business. Bumped is fun. BUMP. Bump. Have you ever said, somebody says, hey, what's that contact? If both the phones have bump, I can say, I'm going to share this contact. I can bump the two phones together and it transfers the contact. Or suppose I want to share some pictures with somebody. I can open up bump. I can select the pictures I want to share. I can bump the phone with the other phone and the pictures automatically transfer. So that's kind of a fun application. And of course, my favorite streaming application is Pandora. I can pick out, Pandora allows me to pick out artists that I want to stream, and they'll create a dedicated radio station just for me based on the kind of music that that artist particularly does. Yelp for restaurant reviews I really enjoy. So I can go out there and I can be driving, and there'll be a lot of restaurants in the area. I can just click Yelp, and I can say, give me, you know, find all the restaurants in the area, and it will list all the reviews. So now what I'm doing, I'm reading the reviews before I go to the restaurant. And the Yelp reviews are actually pretty good. When I travel internationally, I like to use Wikihood. You know, this is actually what it does. It takes all the Wikipedia. It takes all the Wikipedia articles that are for areas, for things that are located in your area. So it gives you a list of all the Wikipedia features in your area, and so you can actually decide what to look at. Now, for airline reservations, the application I like the best is HipMonk. HipMonk. And I'll tell you, the HipMonk, you know, a lot of times you've got layovers. It gives sort of a graphical layout of the layovers, and so you can actually pick the best option very quickly, and it's got a great user interface. I love HipMonk. Now, for synchronizing files, you know, I put a file on my iPad, put a file on my computer. I use Dropbox.
That's great, isn't it?
So Dropbox, it's a folder. It's Dropbox folder on my. And so if I can copy a file to the Dropbox folder on my PC, it shows up on my iPhone and my iPad automatically. Because of course, the iPhone and the iPad don't have thumb drives. They don't have USB ports. So you've got to synchronize with subdirectories. And finally, for productivity. Because I do. I don't play all the time. Sometimes I try to actually be productive on my on my devices.
No kidding.
What I use for Microsoft Office equivalent are the Apple products. Pages, which is their version of Excel. Pages, which is their version of Word. Numbers, which is their version of Excel. And Keynote, which is their version of PowerPoint. So I've got Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, and that's what I use if I have to read any Microsoft Office files. I'll tell you, I am waiting for Microsoft Office to release a version of Microsoft Office for the iPad.
That'd be great.
And it's coming out soon.
Oh, we have a comment for you since you finished. Were you finished with that particular?
I'm finished with
okay,
that
Okay, we
segment.
Have a comment for you.
Okay.
We have used Google Translate on this show before. I am sorry you have forgotten about me, Dr. Schertz.
Okay, I'm so sorry. So sorry. Okay.
You don't remember her?
No, I'd remember her. No. Okay, come over here, you know. I'll give you a hug. Okay. Oh, we got an email from another regular listener. This is our last email from a regular listener.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, an email from Tung in Ohio. She said, "You know, this we got a whole listening group in Ohio. It's actually amazing.
Why don't they get together in the morning and just down and
I think they're all up there listening to tech. They're all gathering around the around the computer listening to Tech Talk now with the live stream. Dear Doc." Oh, this is getting more informal now that they've sent several emails.
Yeah.
I'm confused about CDs that play music. Is there a special format for a music CD? Love the show. Listen to your podcast here in Ohio. Thanks, Tung. Well, Tung, audio CDs use a completely different format than data CDs or DVDs that you might use on your computer. As a result, they require a different approach to create. A data CD is very much like a hard drive. It contains sectors and files and folders and all the things that we're used to seeing on a hard disk. In fact, the CD is written very much like a concentric set of data circles, just as hard disks are. Now, an audio CD is more similar to a vinyl record. It's best thought of as a single spiral of data, sort of the reverse of that of vinyl. It starts in the middle and slowly spirals outward as a single stream of bits. While a data CD can contain music, it's often in the form of compressed MP3s or files or in other audio formats like FLAC that we just learned about. The result can be several hours of music in roughly 700 megabytes of data that you can store on a CD. Now, that's not true for an audio CD. A single spiral of data can contain only one format, uncompressed. So it's uncompressed, so the audio CDs actually contain less data. Typically, you've got 16-bit stereo at a sampling rate of 14 kilohertz. Now, if you do the math, 16 bits per sample, two stereo tracks times 45 samples per second, divided by 8 bits per byte, you find that an audio CD requires 176,000 bytes per second of audio, and that a 700 megabyte CD can only hold 69 minutes of audio. So obviously, if you want to get more audio on the CD, you're better off using either MP3 or FLAC. And of course, there are audio CD players that can also play data CDs. Mm-hmm. These normally have the MP3 logo on them, and that's where the confusion comes from. Great question. I'm glad you noticed there was a difference between a data CD and an audio CD. And I'll tell you, I love all of our listeners in from Ohio, and thanks for that email, Tung.
Well, now, if our listeners want to send you an email or any kind, well, it would be my email. How will we get to you?
If you want to, we get all of our emails through techtalk@stratford.edu. That's how we get them, and those are forwarded directly to me, and I'll pick them up on the show. And we love all these emails because they're an important part of the show.
Now, and of course, you're a multitasker, so while you're doing all of this, there's something else you're doing over there.
Oh, yes. I'm also monitoring our Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and I'll monitor your comments live during the show.
This is your Classroom of the Airwaves, heard every week at 9 o'clock Eastern on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. Please stand by. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Stanford Robert Ovshinsky. You familiar with Stanford Robert Ovshinsky?
I'm sure I'm about to know everything I ever wanted to know about him.
And the one thing you will know, he did not go to Stanford. Stanford Robert Ovshinsky is an American inventor and scientist whose inventions include, listen to this list, batteries that we use in laptops and computers
and
digital cameras, thin film solar energy panels, Flat screen LCDs, rewritable CD and DVD discs, hydrogen fuel cells, and non-volatile phase change memory. He accomplished all of this without a college degree and has been compared to Edison.
Wow.
Stanford Robert Ovshinsky was born November 24, 1922, in Akron, Ohio. Before graduating from high school on June 1941, Ovshinsky worked as a toolmaker. During World War II, he worked in the tool room of a Goodyear plant in Arizona. Near the end of the war, he returned to Akron and started his own machine business, machine company, initially in a barn. He developed and patented his first invention, the Benjamin Center Drive, named after his father. I guess his father's name was Benjamin. This or unique center. Automatic high-speed drive lathe had many important usages, including the production of artillery shells during the Korean War. Ovshinsky developed an interest in human and machine intelligence. So he began studying the research literature on neurophysiology, neurological diseases, and cybernetics. He was kind of interested in that, and that actually fueled a lot of his later research. In 1951, Ovshinsky accepted an offer to move to Detroit and work in the automotive industry as director of research for Hupp Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of Hupp Motor Company.
Nor have I.
Yeah. He invented the electric power steering.
Huh.
Which was actually, you know, ahead of its time.
Oh, wait a minute. I have heard of Hupp. They made the Hupp Mobile, if I'm not mistaken. I'm serious. I'm going to check. Yeah, I will.
But the Hupp's president, who was not really a visionary, was opposed to completing any kind of arrangements with General Motors to utilize the product. So that electric variation of the that electric power steering really didn't make much progress because it was stopped from the top. Then Stan and Herb Ovshinsky, Herb's his brother, started their second company, called General Automation. I guess he was so distraught over Hupp's rejection of his electric power steering. Mm-hmm. They started a second company called General Automation in the Detroit storefront. Now, that's when he continued his study of the use of, intelligent use of computers and machines to look at neurophysiology. He began studying intelligent machines. He embarked on early research and development of various energy and information technologies. By the late 1950s, Stan had invented and Herb Ovshinsky had built an artificial nerve cell using an amorphous thin film switch that they called the Ovatron. See, this was a very innovative idea using amorphous silicon instead of single crystal silicon, or amorphous materials instead of single crystal materials. Everybody's working on single crystal materials back then for transistors, and he created this whole new field on amorphous semiconductors. Stan patented the device, and the brothers disclosed it publicly in 1959 in New York City. Ovshinsky opened the scientific field of amorphous and disordered materials in the course of his research in the 40s and 50s. In 1960, Ovshinsky and his second wife, Iris Dibner, founded Energy Conversion Laboratory, dedicating the laboratory to the solution of important societal problems. Amorphous silicon became the basis of many technologies, including writable CDs and DVDs, solar energy, because they were actually rolling out amorphous solar cells out of machines that are miles long, the LCD flat panel display, and electronic memory. His wife, by the way, had a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
After his wife's death, he started a new company, Ovshinsky Innovation, which was devoted to innovative and revolutionary energy and information electronics. On October of 2007, he married Rosa Young. At that point, he was 84 years old.
He's a smart guy, right?
Yeah, he married Rosa Young. She was a physicist who worked on the hydrogen-powered hybrid car at ECD, and she shared his vision of a hydrogen economy. Ovshinsky was self-taught. This is without any formal college or graduate training. Many well-known scientists visited his labs, including John Bardeen, co-inventor of the transistor. He actually had a cadre of very great scientists that worked with him kind of in a advisory capacity, and they loved the way he thought. Kind of the key, sort of the key to his innovation is that he brought together a lot of different fields that normally didn't talk. See, the one of the problems with traditional research, people get in a particular discipline, it's a silo. There could be another silo over here, and the people in the two silos don't actually cross, you know, cross-pollinate very much in ideas and concepts. But because he wasn't any kind of formal education, he was looking in multiple silos all across the board, and he was able to innovate in quite a dramatic way. Because of his many inventions in digital memory, solar energy, battery technology, optical media, solid-state hydrogen power storage, and his hundreds of scientific patents, he's often been compared to Thomas Edison. In the area of alternative fuels, his pioneering work has caused in both solar cells as well as hydrogen cells. They have, many writers have referred to him as the modern world's most important energy visionary. Hmm. I featured him because Ovchinsky died of prostate cancer this week, October 17th, 2012, at age 89. A true innovator,
yeah,
and a man who made a real difference trying to solve the big problems of the world just through the sheer creativity that he had. We don't have many scientists like that anymore.
What a remarkable life.
It's a remarkable life. Stanford Robert Ovchinsky, inventor extraordinaire.
Hope you're paying attention, because in just a few moments you're going to have a chance to win valuable food based on the information culled from profiles in IT. So pay attention, get ready, and get your dialing finger ready.
This is your classroom of the airwaves. Tech Talk Radio, heard weekly on
1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Now we're going to get to the real business of the classroom of the airways. And you know what the business end of
it's
teaching
food
is?
Business.
It's testing.
Oh, I'm a step ahead.
It's testing.
And I'm hungry.
If you get the beauty of this, if you get 100 on this pop quiz, in addition to getting an A for the day,
you get an egg.
You could get an egg. You'll get two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, or the Karem Dining Room. All you have to do is just call in your very special way, which we will give you in a moment.
Right.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Stanford Robert Ovchinsky, inventor extraordinaire. One of his first, initial inventions was that of electric power steering. Where was he working when he invented electric power steering? Now, this was ultimately rejected by the president of the company, but it was still a great invention at the time.
That's why you can't buy a Hupmobile anymore.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Look at this.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the way you get the answer to us is to pick up the phone and your POTS line and call us on the following number, 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of Akron, Ohio, and east of Detroit, Michigan, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
Now, if you're calling from Indonesia, you can call on Skype. And then you just simply contact the Tech Talk Radio 1 and call that account, and that will be forwarded directly to the studio, so anybody in the world can call us at this show.
Indonesia, really?
Indonesia.
What
yes,
time
indeed.
Is it there? It's like 9 o'clock at night or something.
It's actually 12 hours ahead.
So I was right. It's nine
o'clock at night.
Exactly.
So if you're sitting around having a nightcap, give us a call.
Why, look, there's an Indonesian exchange that just came up on the call screen. Okay,
that's right. So where do most people destroy their iPhone?
Bathroom.
Yeah, let's look at the data. Now, actually, over the years, myself, I had one that was destroyed when Marianne washed my bathrobe, and it had the.
I don't want to think about you in a bathrobe.
It had the. Well, that's how I prepare Tech Talk every.
Oh, I'm leaving now.
Yeah. But. And then the second one that I destroyed, I had it in the pocket of my swimming suit, and I went swimming in the
ocean.
I don't
want
to
think
ocean.
About that either. You tucked into the waistband of your Speedo.
Yeah, so I've only destroyed two, but I've never destroyed an iPhone, but I've destroyed two Blackberries.
Really?
But now I'm now an iPhone devotee.
I usually wreck them by dropping them, but I had a StarTAC, which was my previous favorite phone before the iPhone. I ran that through the washing machine. That worked really
that'll
badly.
Do it every time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now, according to a device warranty provider, SquareTrade, most people, that would be 21%, that is, damage their phone in the kitchen. The runner-up is 18%. Ruin it in the living room, and only 16% ruin it in the bathroom. I'd have thought the bathroom would be number one.
I would have thought so, too.
All in all, 51% of iPhone accidents happen inside the house. Now, to find out, the company tapped the survey sampling and asked 35 questions to 2,000 iPhone owners in August. Other findings include that water is overwhelmingly the most common liquid.
And that's the one thing that they won't replace
that's
it for, right?
That's right. No, they won't. But, you know, they actually have a little tag inside the phone. They can tell if it's been damaged by water.
No kidding.
Yeah, it turns red.
Wow.
I tried to go to Verizon and say, my BlackBerry is, I need it replaced under warranty because it's not working. So they took off the back cover.
And
they took out the battery. And there was this red dot. They said, I'm sorry, sir. This BlackBerry's been wet.
Mm-hmm.
You've been busted.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get it replaced under warranty. Okay, 43% of the time it's damaged by water. 19% of the time it's damaged by soda. 12% of the time it's damaged by beer or coffee.
Will they replace it if it's damaged by another liquid besides water?
I have to check the details on that.
And I wonder if the little sensor thingy turns red for other liquids.
I'm certain it does.
You've got to figure that out for us.
Okay, now the results follow a similar study published by SquareTrade last month that claimed Americans alone have spent $5.9 billion on damaged iPhones. Now, the same survey noted that the main reason phones became damaged in the first place, the main reason, was falling out of user hands. 30% of the time, followed by liquid damage 18% of the time.
Beer will help it fall out of user hands.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe that's you drink the beer and then you drop
exactly.
it. Maybe that's how that works.
Probably.
That's right.
Okay, all right. So now we have this to do because we have somebody on the line. Let's go first to line 47A. This is Nelson calling from Rockville, Maryland. Nelson, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Schertz asked the question,
yes, earlier
please.
In the show I talked about Robert, Stanford Robert Ovshinsky, inventor extraordinaire. What company was he working for when he invented the electric power steering device?
He was working for the Hoff Company, the car company.
Okay, very good. Hupp Motor Company, we'll give you that because Hupp is correct.
That is, and because I pressed the music, that means that's the official scorer right there.
That is the official scorekeeper, exactly. So you win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Kerham Dining Room. Just stay on the line, and our trusty producer will get your name and address and email address.
He's your adjunct professor,
yes,
professor
adjunct,
for prize
adjunct
support.
Professor,
exactly.
Yes, indeed.
So, Nelson, have you been listening to the show for long?
No, actually, today is my first time.
Excellent. How did you find out about us?
I don't know. Maybe a mistake. I don't know.
I'm thinking mistake is probably right. Nothing. Hang on.
It was random. It was a random act of chance.
You got free food, Nelson. Hang on a second. Thank you for listening, and hope maybe you'll make the same mistake next weekend. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. We might be right back after this. Maybe.
It's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And of course, August 16th was Ada Lovelace Day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ada Lovelace.
You mean October 16th?
Yeah, what did I say?
August.
Oh, yeah, October 16th. Yeah, it must be.
Whatever it takes.
It is October 16th.
It's one of the 16th. You got 12 chances to get it right.
Ada Lovelace was a pioneer. She was the daughter of Lord Byron. Ada was also the daughter of a woman who was fed up with Lord Byron because he was a womanizer.
Ah.
If you get into the dirty little details of Lord Byron. Now, in an effort to dampen the dangerous poetic blood in her daughter that flowed from Lord Byron, she encouraged her to study mathematics and not study poetry at all. Despite this, Ada did enjoy poetry and mathematics. Ask your mother in a letter if she wouldn't let her study some poetry. Maybe she could at least do some poetical science. Poetical science.
What is that?
It's just a combination of the two. Actually, science was poetic to Ada. While everyone else was likely bored to tears at a dinner party when old Babbage droned on about his analytical engine, Ada was fascinated. She liked it so much that she began corresponding with Babbage, even writing up notes on and summarizing Babbage's plans. In those notes, Ada predicted that the machine, like Babbage's, was planning would one day be used to compose music, produce graphics, and would be employed for practical and scientific use. Of course, like many so other great visionaries, she left us far too young, dying of an illness at only age 36. Now, we celebrate Ada not for her visions of computers, but because she suggested a plan for the engine to calculate Bernoulli numbers, and that algorithm is now considered to be the first computer program. So Ada Lovelace is... Is now
is it 10 o'clock yet?
We're moving. She was considered to be the first computer programmer. In fact, there was an Ada programming language written after her in honor of Lady Lovelace.
Ooh.
We now have October 16th as Ada Lovelace Day, and so there we go.
I'm glad you told me about that.
That's right.
Okay.
Hackers exploit the zero-day bugs for up to 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Software vendors are constantly on the watch for the so-called zero-day vulnerability. These are flaws in their code that hackers find and exploit before the first day that the code is released. They're able to use these flaws for up to 10 months. This is one of the findings of a broad study of hacker zero-day exploits by two researchers at the antivirus firm Symantec. Lila Bilge and Tudor Dumitra used data collected from 11 million PCs running Symantec's antivirus software to correlate and catalog zero-day attacks. Using data analysis, they found that 18 attacks that represented zero-day exploits occurred between February 2008 and March of 2010, only seven of which were previously known to have been exploited prior to their discovery. Most disturbingly, they found that these attacks continued 312 days on average, and sometimes up to 2.5 years before the security community became aware of them. 60% of the zero-day vulnerabilities that they identified in the study were not known before and suggests that there are many more zero-day exploits out there. One aspect of the zero-day exploits is that many of them are tough to track down and count because they infect not that many machines because the machines and the companies they're trying to target are so limited. All but four of the exploits infected less than 100 targets, and four were found to infect only one machine at all. A careful analysis of the zero-day exploits showed that many are reserved for stealthy espionage tactics rather than credit card harvesting. So this has now been moved into the realm of cyber warfare between countries. A lot of the attacks against the Iran nuclear plants use zero-day exploits that just targeted those particular ones. Now, people are actually selling zero-day exploits on the open market. A single zero-day exploit can cost as much as $250,000, and fees are often paid in installments based on the vulnerability remaining secret and unpatched. Unsurprisingly, the study showed that hackers target common software like Microsoft Word, Flash, and Adobe Reader. 16 of the 18 zero-day exploits analyzed affected only Microsoft and Adobe software. That's one reason, by the way, that Steve Jobs does not like to put Adobe Flash on the Apple machines. But that's quite interesting development on the zero-day exploits.
Mm-hmm.
Text spam messaging is on the rise. Mobile phone consumers receive about 1.5 billion of text spam messages in 2008. Especially when I'm traveling in India, I get a lot of spam.
Do you really?
I don't get so much spam with my Verizon account, but once I put in my my Indian SIM card, I get a lot of and it plays music and it's very annoying. Yeah. In 2011, the figure shot up to 4.5 billion text spam messages, according to Ferris Research. That represents less than 1% of all text messages, so it's still, small compared to the total. Text spamming is illegal, but that really doesn't stop spammers who will typically send out thousands of spams at once. Most use a computer program to generate millions of mobile phone number combinations, hoping that a fraction of these numbers are working and that someone will respond. AT&T Mobility warned of recent scams, such as the one that emerged after Hurricane Isaac. Customers reported receiving text spam messages saying they'd qualified for public assistance to recover from storm damage. Mobile phone companies are trying to fight back with a combination of internal security measures by asking customers to aggressively report spam messages. Now, remember this. AT&T, Verizon, and Mobile now will deal with spam. Forward your spam message to 7726. Forward the spam message to 7726. That actually spells out spam, by the way, if you look at the letters on the numbers. So if you forward the spam for AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile to 7726, that spell spam, they'll actually list that as spam, and it will help end it.
Fantastic.
Mobile phone carriers have asked customers for phone numbers that's linked to the spam so they can start investigating. Many spam is phishing, where they're phishing for accounts and passwords, so beware. So if they ask you for any kind of data, just don't give it to them. Very, very dangerous. So that's really on the rise.
I've been getting one recently from this thing that says, hey, have a friend that smokes, and they give you all this other garbage about who to contact, and forget it.
I know. Let's look at some of the top technology trends. We've got about a minute.
We're having so much fun. Save that for next
Listen,
week.
Listen, go to Stratford University website, stratford.edu, and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk. Also, go to techtalkonline.com and sign up for our podcast.
Very good. If you like the hot mess that this show was, you can hear it again at 6 o'clock this afternoon.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
It is homecoming day at the Naval Academy. Navy hosts Indiana with the pregame coverage starting at 1:30 today and the kickoff at 3:30 here on Federal News Radio. The forecast is going to be partly sunny today, high in the mid-60s with a gentle west wind. Right now outside our studios in Northwest D.C., 58 degrees. It's 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or